Some of you might find this hard to believe, but your minister wasn't always an angel growing up, particularly at school. Back in those days, schools were allowed to dispense corporal punishment. I got my share. It wasn't for anything like fighting or cheating. I always seemed to get in trouble because of my mouth. That's probably something you can believe. I remember the last time that happened to me was in fifth grade. Teacher and I didn't get along very well to start with. And one day I mumbled something under my breath that wasn't as under my breath as I thought. She marched me outside. She had this really long paddle. And after she applied that to my backside, she made me go sit in my desk and copy several pages out of an etiquette book about proper respect and not talking back and a bunch of other stuff I don't remember. But I remember that as I had to write those pages, it was really uncomfortable sitting in that wooden desk. I mention that because that's how I felt writing this sermon this week. We've been going through Peter's first letter, and one of the themes that he develops in this letter is the idea of submission. We suggested last week that submission is the key to spiritual success in our lives. And we said that Peter applies this in a variety of areas in our lives. Last week we saw how spiritual success can be achieved in our society when we submit to the governing authorities. Now we turn in 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 18 through 20. Slaves, submit to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and considerate, but also to those who are harsh. For it is commendable if a man bears up under the pain of unjust suffering because he is conscious of God. But how is it to your credit if you receive a beating for doing wrong and endure it? But if you suffer for doing good and you endure it, this is commendable before God. Now, in our culture, we might have trouble grasping this concept. William Barclay writes, "To understand the real meaning of what Peter is saying, we must understand something of the nature of slavery at the time of the early church. In the Roman Empire, there were as many as 60 million slaves. Slavery began with the Roman conquests, slaves being originally prisoners taken in war. And in very early times, Rome had few slaves. But by the New Testament times, slaves were counted in the millions. It was by no means only menial tasks which were performed by slaves. Doctors, teachers, musicians, actors, secretaries, and stewards were all slaves. In fact, all of the work of Rome was done by slaves. The Roman attitude was that there was no point in a master of the world doing his own work. Let the slaves do that and let the citizens live in pampered idleness. The supply of slaves would never run out. Slaves were not allowed to marry, but they cohabitated. And the children born to such a partnership were the property of the master, not of the parents. Just as lambs born to the sheep belong to the owner of the flock and not to the sheep. It would be wrong to think that the lot of slaves was always wretched and unhappy, and that they were always treated with cruelty. Many slaves were loved and trusted members of the family, but one inescapable fact dominated the whole situation. In Roman law, a slave was not a person, but a thing, and he had absolutely no legal rights whatsoever. For that reason, there could be no such thing as justice where a slave was concerned. In regard to a slave, his master's will, and even his master's whim, was the only law." And many early Christians including those who would have originally read this letter, were such slaves. Now, technically, the Greek word that Peter uses in this text is not the normal one for slaves. It's a specific term. We might say they were domestic servants, ones who worked inside the house. But those were many of the people that Peter was writing to. Say, well, that's all well and good. Thanks for the history lesson. What's this have to do with me? While we don't have slavery in our culture, we do have another situation that is closely similar and to which we can apply the same principles, and that is in the workplace. Between an employer and an employee. And so what Peter writes about in this passage, where he says slaves substitute employees, where he writes masters substitute employers, and the principles apply the same. And it speaks to us today. And remember, we talked about last week this idea of spiritual success. What does that mean? Does it mean that we always get what we want? It doesn't mean that we're always happy and never have problems. Spiritual success means that we live our lives in such a way that even unbelievers have to admit that there's something different, in a good way, about our lives. They can recognize that we are Christians and that there is a difference. And that will be a good reflection on God. That God's reputation is not tainted by our lives, but in fact, we are good advertisements for Him. That's what spiritual success means in Peter's letter. And today, we're going to consider how that can be done within the workplace. Peter begins in verse 18, submit yourselves to your masters with all respect. Now, last week we saw that that term submit is a military term. It's a lesser rank coming under the authority of a higher rank. Something that we can certainly relate to. Now, this isn't the only place that such a command is given. Paul mentioned it in three separate occasions. In Ephesians 6, verses 5 through 8, we read, slaves, obey your earthly masters with respect and fear, and with sincerity of heart, just as you would obey Christ. Obey them not only to win their favor, when their eye is on you, but like slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from your heart. Serve wholeheartedly as if you were serving the Lord, not men. Because you know that the Lord will reward everyone for whatever good he does, whether he is slave or free. Paul also writes in Titus 2:9, teach slaves to be subject to their masters in everything, to try to please them, not to talk back to them. Probably could have used that verse in fifth grade. Then in Colossians 3, verses 22 through 25, slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything, and do it not only when their eye is on you and to win their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Anyone who does wrong will be repaid for his wrong, and there is no favoritism. I want you to notice in those passages that we read, not only from Peter, but those passages from Paul's letters, there are both actions and attitudes that are commanded in this situation. We are to submit, to be subject, to obey those over us. Those are all actions. Those are things that we do. Notice how we are to do them. With respect. With sincerity of heart. Those are attitudes. Those are mindsets. It's not enough that we are to do what we're told. God also looks at the heart. He looks at the attitude with which we carry out those tasks. Now, I don't want this to come across negatively. J.I. Packer writes, there is an ethic of hope that pervades the New Testament. And that's the theme that we find in Peter's letter. He talks a lot about hope. Now, what is that hope? Hope isn't just wishful thinking. Hope is that confident expectation that God will fulfill His promises. Hope is that certainty that one day Christ will return, that one day we will stand before God and give an account for our lives, and He will reward the faithful and punish the unfaithful. So with that in mind, based on these scriptures we have read, I would like to propose a work ethic of hope that should apply to every Christian, whatever we find ourselves doing. First of all, work hard. Paul wrote, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart. Whatever task we do, we should do it to the best of our ability. I can remember years ago when I lived in Virginia, I worked in a little print shop. Just a very small, I think there were 6 or 8 of us that worked there. But it was growing. And one time a job went out that the person brought back and wasn't pleased with the quality of the work. And there was a big sign in the back, not where the customers would see, but in the back where we all worked. Big sign said, good enough is not good enough. Whoever did that job thought, well, this is good enough, and sent it out. It wasn't good enough. But I wonder how many of us adopt that same attitude in our work. Oh, it's good enough. May not be my best, but it's enough to get by. As Christians, we should be known as people who work hard, not just people who are getting by. That's something that is underscored throughout the New Testament. Secondly, we need to work honestly. These scriptures say we are to work not only when the boss's eye is on us to win their favor, but with sincerity of heart. Our work should be consistent, whether someone is watching us or not. Now, think about your workplace. Is it different when the supervisor is there and when he's not there? Is it different when the manager comes walking through? Do people all of a sudden hurry up and get busy? Remember a story I heard about a politician who was wanting a photo op, and so he donned a hard hat and went to the local factory and wanted to shake hands with some of the workers. And he went up to one of the guys on the assembly line and he said, say there, how long have you been working here? And the fellow responded, ever since the boss threatened to fire me. Is that what it takes to get people to work? Does there always have to be that threat of if you don't get busy, this is what's going to happen? And then thirdly, we need to work humbly. And I think this is really where Peter is getting at in the passage from his letter today. The attitudes of respect and humility must accompany our actions of obedience to the boss. See, in God's sight, the obligation of Christian workers to their bosses is just as unconditional and universal as it is to God Himself. Regardless of how unreasonable a boss may be or how oppressive a work situation may be, the faithful believer willingly submits himself in everything as long as he is employed in that job. If the situation becomes intolerable, you look for work elsewhere. But as long as we are there, we are to be known by those three things. We need to work hard. We need to work honestly. We need to work humbly. Now ask yourself, are we known as those kind of employees? Here's a quick way to know for sure. Let's say you go to work tomorrow. Somebody comes up to you and says, hey, did you hear that the company put hidden cameras all over the plant? And this week they're reviewing everybody's work that's been recorded. How nervous would you be? Would it make a difference if you knew that you were being watched? That's a good way to gauge our work ethic of hope. If we're working hard, if we're working honestly, if we're working humbly. Now again, I don't want this to be negative and overbearing and threatening. We call this a work ethic of hope. And the hope stems from the fact that we know God sees everything we do. Now, how many of you have had a boss somewhere along the line that never commended anything you did right, but boy, the first thing you messed up was all over you? Discouraging, isn't it? You just want to say, what about the 100 things I did right? You want to focus on the one thing that I did wrong. Here's the good news. Those 100 things that you got right, God sees them. And God will reward them. So it's a positive thing. It's not just a matter of, I got to work harder, I get fired. It's a matter of, God sees everything that I do, and He is going to reward the good things that are done. Nothing is missed. Nothing is overlooked. Not only that, but from these passages we see that our boss is not just the person above us or the person who signs our paycheck. We see that God Himself is our boss. I remember hearing somebody once say, we should work as though Jesus Christ was our foreman. Here's a hint. We don't have to pretend He is. If we call Christ Lord, which as Christians we do, that's just another word for master, another word for boss. We are to work as though we are working for Christ because, in fact, we are. And so if you have a supervisor at work or if you have a manager at work that you think is unfair, you think is unreasonable, you think sometimes is harsh, that's the word Peter used. Remember that our ultimate employer, our ultimate boss, is Christ. And He is good, and He is fair, and He does see everything that we do, and He does acknowledge the good things that we do. The main emphasis, though, as I mentioned in Peter's text, is the last of those terms, to be humble. We're to work for our employers with respect, even when they don't deserve it. In fact, I would go so far as to say, especially when they don't deserve it. And this is why I brought up that whole thing in my introduction about how uncomfortable it was to prepare this sermon this week. Because I'm going to be very honest with you. I'm struggling with this right now. I'm having a real hard time with this very concept at my workplace. I don't want you to think that just because I stand up here behind this pulpit and present God's Word week after week that I got it all together. I don't. And this is one of those areas that I'm having trouble with. I'll be very honest with you. This is hard. This is where the rubber meets the road. And quite frankly, it's a lot easier to stand up here and preach God's Word than it is to go out there tonight and tomorrow and the next week and practice it in a situation that is difficult. But that is precisely what we are called as Christians to do. And so much of it has to do with our attitude. I'm sure you've known of people that they do the right thing, they say the right thing, but you know they don't mean it. You know their heart isn't in it. Might be the greeter at Walmart. Have a nice day. They said the right word, but I doubt that their heart was in it. Our attitude is so important. Now, in any workplace, just like there is in society, there's always authority. You have to have it. Could you imagine what your workplace would be like if there was no boss? It'd be a madhouse. That's just human nature. And so there is a necessity for this kind of submission. But it is much more important for the Christian employee to submit. Why? Because there's more than our paycheck riding on it. Our testimony is at stake. And remember, the whole idea here of spiritual success is making God look good. And if we want to make God look good to our employer and to our fellow employees, this is what we need to do. How's that done practically? I found a good example in Stanley Baldwin's excellent book, Take This Job and Love It, in which he relates a real-life situation, how an employee of his put this into practice. He writes, Jerry kept a positive attitude toward me. He remarked to me one time, you know how a boss can make an employee look good to the rest of the company, sometimes even cover for his mistakes? I believe that an employee can make his boss look good too. And that's what I want to do. As I thought about it, I realized he was right. A boss whose workers produce well, make few mistakes, and have good attitudes will probably look very good in the eyes of his supervisors. If you want to get along famously with your boss, try to make him or her look good. Your boss will probably love you for it. A lot of truth to that statement. That's not easy to do. Especially when you're tempted to think that your boss doesn't have a brain, or doesn't know what he's doing, doesn't know what he's talking about, or whatever. If you think he's incompetent, if you think he's inconsistent, if you think he's less than considerate, that's very difficult to do. But that is precisely what we are called to do. Now, if you think Peter's admonition in the first half of the verse is difficult, read on. Not only does he say, submit yourselves to your masters with all respect, then he goes on to add, not only to those who are good and considerate, but also to those who are harsh. Obedience does not vary according to the temperament of the employer. This is what I'm calling the absent exception to submission. You know, someone will say, oh, but you don't know my boss. He's the most demanding, demeaning slave driver you've ever met. It doesn't matter. Peter states that we are to submit not only to the good and considerate bosses, but also to those who are harsh. Now, what do we mean by that word harsh? In the original language, the Greek word here is scolios. We get the medical term scoliosis from it. Means crooked. Think your boss is a crook? That's exactly who Peter's talking about here. You think he's unfair? That's exactly who he's talking about here. God says that even when the employer is unbearable, we must bear it. And we must do it with the right attitude. Why? Because as we've seen previously, we are working ultimately for the Lord. Now, I think there's another reason why we as Christians must maintain a proper attitude and have the proper actions regardless of the character of the boss. Anyone can submit to a good boss. Anybody can follow the directions of somebody who is considerate, somebody who is competent, somebody that you believe in. But believers are called to go beyond that. We are called to be respectful, submissive, obedient to the harsh, overbearing boss. This stands out as distinctly Christian behavior. See, Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, verses 43 through 47, "You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. He causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? If you greet only your brothers, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that?" Is there any difference between us and the people that we work with every day? Are we just like them? When they start their gripe groups about everything that's wrong with the company and everything that's wrong with the boss, are we in there adding our 2 cents? If I look like I'm in pain, I am, because this has been very convicting on me. Because it's easy to slip into that. It's easy to just get caught up in that attitude of, oh yeah, this is wrong, and this, and you just dive into it and get swept away in it. And at that point, we look just like everybody else. And we've lost our distinctiveness. There is no exception to what Peter says here. I know it's not easy. We don't feel like doing it. And that's the key. Because people of the world are going to do what they feel. I feel like griping, I'm going to gripe. I feel like sloughing off, I'm going to slough off, because somebody else does it. They get away with it, why can't I? The Christian is called to go beyond our feelings. And by an act of the will, do what's right when we don't feel like it. And if we do that, people will see a difference. You go through the scriptures and you find people that were able to pull it off. Joseph in the Old Testament. Everywhere he went, he impressed the people above him. Started with Potiphar. He was a slave in Potiphar's house. Potiphar was so impressed that he elevated him to a high rank. He got thrown in prison unjustly. But he impressed the warden so much that he was put over the other prisoners. When he was finally let out of prison and got the attention of the Pharaoh was so impressed with Joseph that he made him vice Pharaoh, gave him all the powers of the office under himself alone. Now he was treated unjustly. He was wrongly accused. But he didn't sit around and gripe about it. He didn't bemoan his fate. And, oh, this is so terrible. He remained faithful. And he was a good testimony. How about David? Do you know who David's boss was before he became king? A guy named Saul. You know what his boss wanted to do? Kill him. You think your boss wants to kill you? Not really. But David's did. And David maintained his integrity. Daniel, we've been studying about him in our Sunday school class. Daniel served under a number of foreign kings. And yet the one consistent thing was that he impressed them all with his integrity. And regardless of how godless they might have been, regardless of how cruel and unfair they might have been, and each one of them were, he maintained the proper attitude as well as the proper actions. Look at Nehemiah. Wow. What a minefield he had to tiptoe through. Talk about politics. They were all over. But he always kept his respect. He always kept his head. And he stands out, as all of these characters do, as those who could work well below the authority that was above them. We can learn valuable lessons from their lives. And when we do, we will receive the almighty endorsement of submission. Twice in this passage, Peter encourages his readers that doing the right thing is commendable before God. God always rewards obedience to authority because, as we've seen, it's really obedience to Him. Paul tells us in Romans 13 that all authority comes from God. We tend to only think of that in the government context because that's what Paul was writing in at the time, but it's true in all settings. God has established authority. Now maybe you've been overlooked for a promotion or for a raise. Maybe other people have gotten the credit for the hard work you have done. Maybe you feel like the only time the boss says anything to you is when he's criticizing something that you might have missed. And he never sees anything that you do right. Don't worry. God sees everything we do. And in the words of Matthew 6:4, your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Let me ask you, if you had to choose between getting a commendation from your boss at work or getting a commendation from Almighty God, which would you take? God sees, God knows, and God will reward. I like the way Chuck Swindoll puts it. Our focus then should not be consumed with getting the raise at the office, but from getting praise from God. Not with getting glory for ourselves, but giving the glory to Him. You see, it all boils down to that age-old question, what's my motivation? Why do I do what I do? See, Christianity introduces a new attitude to work. It's the conviction throughout the New Testament that all work is done for Jesus Christ. Whatever you do in word or deed, do everything in the name of Jesus Christ. Whether you eat or drink, whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. In the Christian ideal, work is not done for an earthly master or for personal prestige or to make so much money. It is done for God. Now, it is true, of course, that a man must work in order to earn a wage. He must work to satisfy that employer. But beyond that, there is a Christian conviction that his work must be done well enough to be able to show it to God without shame. If you produce something with your work, would you be willing to show it to God? Every now and then where I work, the supervisor might take a product and bring it out and say, would you buy this if you saw this in the store? There's usually a reason he asks that, because the answer is usually no. If you wouldn't buy it, why would you send it out for somebody else to buy it? Everything we do, can we show it to God? Because God is looking. And can we do it consistently, regardless of what kind of a boss we have? Because ultimately, the work that we do it for the Lord. The pay that we get, the system under which we operate, whether our boss is kind or whether he's ornery and mean, those are incidentals. Not saying they're unimportant, but the basic principle we must establish is that when we work, we're working for the Lord. Spiritual success happens when we live our lives in such a way that the unbelieving world sees a difference. Now, in the workplace, this can be really rough. Trust me, I know. I'm dealing with it right now. But it is something we are to do. Remember, the light shines the brightest when the surroundings are the darkest. And if we want our light to shine before men, the true test is going to come in the difficult days. Work hard. Work honestly. Work humbly. And if no one else notices, God will. And one day we will hear Him say, "Well done, good and faithful servant." And it will be worth it all.